Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Rajana, page 22. What is the meaning of Parinamavad? Raghunath Das Babaji. Parinamavad may be divided into two concepts. Namat Parinama and Tat, the transformation of Brahman, and Tat Shakti Parinamavad, the transformation of the energies of Brahman. Right, so one is the transformation of Brahman, one is the transformation of the energies of Brahman. Right? So it's important to know the difference, because one's actually still an impersonal philosophy, while one is actually the proper Vaishnava philosophy. Right? Because, in other words, we're saying that Divartavad, non-transformation, that's the typical, you know, how you say, Mayavad philosophy. Mm-hmm. But because there are some problems with that as a philosophy, it doesn't hold its weight against the Parinamavad. So some of them taken Parinamavad and then taken and applied it on their Vivartavad. So all they do is say that it's a transformation of Brahman because there can only be Brahman. Right? But the point is it's still a problem because Brahman, if it's Brahman, it doesn't change. It's just change. But in any case, it's just a way to kind of deal with those problems that they come up with by Vivartavad. Right? According to adherents of Brahma Vivartavad, the impersonal Brahman transforms itself, on the one hand, into the living entities, and on the other, into the material universe. Thus they conclude that Brahman is the only known entity, right? So they're trying to keep that there is only Brahman, right? Because otherwise the other one, you have Brahman, and then you have, in the Vivarta, you have the illusion, Maya. And she's not coming from Brahman because Brahman is undifferentiated, but she covers the living entities. Right, so then they think they're separate. So then that's this illusion is there. But then the problem comes is then where did Maya come from? Right, and so that can't be answered. Right, so then the thing is then they say, okay, so Brahman transformed into the jivas and into Maya. Right, but then the definition that Brahman doesn't transform. So the other one doesn't transform. So the other one keeps Brahman in place but can't explain where Maya comes from. The other one explains where Maya and the Jivas come from, but can't explain how Brahman stays as Brahman. Mm-hmm. Right? So both of them have problem. Yes?
So what is the difference?
Well, I mean, in all cases, Brahman would be just the Supreme. The point is if you want to define it according to their definition, there's no real words to define it. It's just, in other words, this is the supreme absolute truth. But, so Brahman, so it's correct, because the supreme absolute truth is Brahman. The only problem is that there's various kinds of Brahman. That they can't tell. So they can't tell Supreme Personality of Godhead Brahman, Paramatma Brahman, and then Brahma Jyoti Brahman. And then there's Jiva Brahman, external energy Brahman, internal energy Brahman. So it's all Brahman. So we agree with that point, it's all Brahman. But to say it's undifferentiated Brahman, that we don't agree with. Right? So in other words, those who say it's exclusively Brahman, then there's a problem. Because the point is there is differentiation within Brahman. So that's where the difficulty comes up. So the trying to establish that God is Brahman. So he's unchanging. He's all these, you know, no material qualities of temporariness or this or that. But at the same time, as because they're taking from here their experience of the material world in time and space. So that helps. There's problems because, right? Because then here form is there because of the illusion, because of temporariness, because of emotions and relations are there due to attachment. So all these are lack of that good qualities, right? But then the difficulty comes is that it also defines that the Lord has all these particular good qualities, right? So then they want to establish the two, But they don't know that you can have those good qualities on the transcendental platform.
Yes.
Right? You understand? Because within form and that, you have the relationships, you have loyalty, you have, you know, affection, you have all these different things that do have their pure state. So they're simply taking them that in the material world, all these qualities are manifest because of material consciousness. So it's due to illusion, which we'll agree with. But the problem is that they don't understand that there is the original world. So if you get all these things, then you end up with basic things, you end up with basically nothing, right? And that's the Brahman. But they don't understand, but Brahman, at the same time, they say is unlimited, this, that, these are qualities. So the point is, if they'll agree to a few qualities, why can't they agree to the rest, right? In other words, if unlimited and pure and absolute are there, why can't the personal qualities also be there on the transcendental platform? Because the point is that Brahman is no qualities, it should be no qualities. Right? But the problem is then how would you even discuss it? Because if you say it's indiscussable, that's still a quality. You know what I'm saying? Can't be described by words, that's still a quality. Right? So that's the difficulty, is that it's unnatural, right? To try to define the means the absolute according to Mayavad philosophy, and it's also impossible.
That they
yes.
Could we imagine that they would then say that it's because our language is insufficient?
No, because then that means then if you had sufficient language, you could. It comes down to if you're dealing with the senses and interacting, it's all illusion. So that means everything that they speak, every word that comes out of their mouth, not even word, every syllable, is illusion. So then the point is why are you talking?
Yeah.
It means, in other words, why is your illusion better than another illusion? So if it's mode of goodness illusion, but it's still material illusion, it's a nicer illusion than the other. So, but that doesn't, still, illusion's illusion. You know what I'm saying? You know, the one has unicorns in their dreams and the other has purple tigers. Okay, so the unicorns are better. Like that. You know what I'm saying? More sattvic, right? The purple tigers would be more rajasa. So therefore then, you know, is that superior? Oh, this one's having superior dreams than that one. It's all dreams. It's all illusions. So the point is their philosophy can't stand as a philosophy. It's actually, as we mentioned before, verbal cognition, because the elements based on authority are true, but then their interpretation of that's verbal cognition, because they're trying to only accept part of it and trying to put it into a context that is unreal. So they're always talking about being real and the truth, but they're the farthest from it. Right? Means, okay, that you get rid of the negative, that you're not involved in the material world. Okay, that's nice. Okay, they don't accept doing good. That's like, okay, you shouldn't do any bad work, but there's no such thing as good work. But if there's no such thing as good work, why is there bad? Means, in other words, if it's all illusion, what's the problem with being in the world? And what does it matter if it's mode of goodness illusion or mode of ignorance illusion? It's all illusion. Right, but they're making a distinction that this is not correct. That means because there must be a correct. Right? So then that means there must be a natural connection between the two. All these things are bad. You can't balance that with an absolute that has no qualities. You know what I'm saying? If being disturbed is bad, that means being peaceful is good. You know what I'm saying? If being self-centered is bad, that means being generous is good. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is it doesn't balance or am able to explain it. But the reason that they don't catch this, even though they're very intelligent people, they don't want to, because they're in illusion themselves. Right? The idea that I'm going to become God and by being God I'll be happy, that is their illusion. And so because of that, therefore, they accept something that's not true. Right? Just like the gross materialist means there may be some fault in sense gratification, but he'll overlook that and look at the benefit. Right? So in the same way as they'll overlook their lack of actual philosophy, realness of the situation, because they want to be on that material platform to enjoy in that way. Mm-hmm. You know, so therefore, you know, so that's why we say wet stool, dry stool, it's all stool, right? You can say the dry stool's better, you know, like that. But it's just, they're the same thing. So gyan and karma are the same thing, just the opposite sides of one or the other. Is that, is that okay? Yes.
So Maharaj, it is more or less the same, this Brahma, Parinamavada, and Vivartavada.
Yeah, they're the same. All the difference is that you're saying that it not Brahman doesn't transform because it's all illusion, or Brahman transforms. But you're not. But the problem is then if Brahman transforms, then where's that permanence of Brahman? You know? So it's just a way of kind of explaining the material phenomena and the individual living entities. Because otherwise they have to say it's all illusion. If it's all illusion, then why are you worried about it? Right? So to give some credence to what they're doing, then they're saying it's all Brahman, so they're keeping that intact. But the actual position of Brahman is lost. Well, the other one, the position of Brahman's not lost, but then if you say it's all Brahman, then from that side it's lost. You know, so that's the called. This theory may be called Advaitavad, means it's all one, right? They're saying it's all one, but if there's illusion, then how is it all one? So this is more a little bit more giving a better thing. In this context, Vivarta and Parinama are synonyms indicating illusory transformation of the impersonal Brahman. Right? So one is saying it's an illusion that there's a transformation. The other one says it's the transformation of illusion. But in any case, it all ends up the same. It's all one, ultimately. Right? Because they're saying that whatever is there is the supreme, so the jivas are, but it's all one. There's no differentiation. So that's the difficulty. Right? Saying that this is all Brahman, and the jivas are Brahman, the material energies are Brahman, Brahman's Brahman. That's not a problem, as long as you can differentiate that it's three kinds of Brahman. Right? The second group, Tat Shakti Parinamavad, states that Tat, Brahmation, does not accept transformation, but that the Achintya Shakti of Brahman is transformed partly into the Jiva Shakti, which manifests the Jiva, and partly into the Maya Shakti, which manifests the material universe. If this view is acknowledged, then Brahman himself does not become transformed. Right? Because Brahman doesn't transform. His energies transform. That's what's happening. Right? Yeah. The Lord's still the same. Whether there's, you know, means his energy is expanding, so if you're dealing with the original, you're dealing with the reflection. The transformation's in the energy, not in the Lord. Right? So that's the important thing. So, in other words, by our philosophy, what each one of them is trying to establish, we have. We have the transformation is of the energy. So the Lord remains the same, but at the same time, is because in the transformation, you don't see the transformation in connection with the Lord. That's illusion, right? The problem is they're trying to simplify it too much, right? So they're leaving out the energy of the Lord. Right? And that the energy is non-different from these problems, so then they can't explain things nicely. Right? So it's only their false ego that they're, you know, very strong and very aggressive.
They think it's their own energies? Or?
Well, technically they'll say, but ultimately it's no energies. But then if, you know, sometimes they'll say is, oh, well, why would this happen? Because then even though we're just explaining what happened. But then there's the things, what's past it happened. So then they'll say, oh, it's pastime. But the point is if it's all one, why does there need to be pastime? If oneness is perfection, why would you do something less? You know, sitting in, you know, your house and it's very nice, you know, nicely arranged, good view, you know, good temperature, you know, comfortable, everything's nice. Why would you have to go out in the backyard and play in the mud just to appreciate that your house is nice? Right, that would mean you'd have to be less intelligent to do that. You know what I'm saying? But no, it's just an option. So then what's the difference? You know? If you're not less intelligent, then it's a bona fide option. So then all these things are bona fide. So then why would you... then the thing is there is no absolute truth. Right? It gives rise to the to this liberal concept. Right? So that's why I actually say is that it's impersonal, because it's liberal, but it's not based on a living entity. It's based on the principles that this living entity should be able to follow. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? There's rights. But the point is, it's not about the individual, it's about the rights. It's not about the individual. It's presented as if it's about the individual, but it's all about the rights. Because the point, if they have the rights, we have the rights. If they don't have the rights, we don't have the rights. So it's not about the individual. Because otherwise, they could have the rights, we might not have the rights. Right? So that's why the Vedic system is actually personal. It's actually liberal. Because one person can be doing something, but others wouldn't do. Right? Does that make sense? The tantric might be doing something that those living in the mode of goodness wouldn't. Or the tribals will be doing something that they can do it, but the people, you know, who are living in the civilized society wouldn't do. Right? But in the so-called liberal, because then it's individual. But in the so-called liberal, it's no. Everybody has, if they can do, everybody has that right. But then the point is it all just becomes one, right? That's the complaint about the conservative, is that it's just all one, it's a blanket rule, and so there's no individuality. But in the other one, it's a blanket rule, there's no individuality. The one, though, there's restriction in the blanket rule, and the other one, there's no restriction in the blanket rule. But that's cool, you understand? So that's the problem with material, is that seeming two differences are exactly the same. And they're just two sides of a coin. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So they're the same, but it comes out not good. You know, and the difference, then there's a problem. Well, in the Vedic, then we look at it, there's a non-difference between the Lord and His energy. Right? And so that makes that pleasantness of the proper mood. But at the same time, there's a difference, so there's interaction. Right? Because then the others, then it creates a community, but at the same time it doesn't improve the quality of interaction. You know, so then that's a problem. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say I'm discussing with a conservative. I have to be careful. I'll say something that they won't like. Right? At the same time as you're discussing with a liberal, you have to be very careful what you say. Right? In fact, more. There's no etiquette of the conservative, unless you point it at him, then he'll just let it go. Right? Etiquette-wise, he'll let you say whatever you want. That's your opinion. Okay, yeah, we respect that. Of course, he's not going to associate with you, or he's maybe going to make trouble for you outside of that. But he'll follow the etiquette in dealing. But the liberal, no, he'll tell you right to your face, oh, that's nonsense, how can you say that? So it's like, you know, what's the difference? You know? One follows etiquette, one doesn't. One says they're the etiquette, and the other one doesn't. No, but it's that's the problem. It's all these mixes. So the only real thing is then that it has both. It has to have rules that are applied to the individual. Then it's actually individual, and it actually then has a proper form. You know? So that's the difficulty. Yes.
So there's a famous verse, the Om Purnamadam, and this is Upanishadic verse.
Right.
So according to this verse, and according to what we just read, it's not possible with following this philosophy to explain this verse. Because it's so obvious.
Yes.
And they must have been, you know, seen that verse. It's there.
Yeah, no, it's just Upanishad. Everyone has to accept the Upanishad. Everybody has to accept it. You know, I mean, it's opening, it's a shanti, so it's also used in other, but it's specific Isha Upanishad, because it's one of the 11. But of the 11, it's considered the first. You know, but that's the point, is that they have to therefore juggle the words. They have to give a different definition of what Purnam means, or, you know, like that. That's where then the Mimamsa comes in, their interpretation. So that's the problem. But like you're saying, is that, you know, any, you know, verse of the Vedas will defeat what they're saying. But they take certain verses and certain verses leave. And then the ones that they take, then they jump on them. Or they take them out of context. You know, like there's a run of verses explaining all about the Lord, so they'll take one verse of that that has some words that they can use to their advantage. So the whole thing is this is bogus. But so if you can point these things out, then they don't have anything to say. Right?
Usually we have experience, if we point it out, they get really like agitated.
Yeah, they get very agitated. Because it's mode of ignorance, so therefore anger comes.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point. If you're dealing in goodness, then you point out something, then it's okay, then you can see that. But when there's ignorance, because you can't tell the difference, that means they understand they don't have anything that, but because they're attached to it, rather than the absolute truth, they become angry. So you always have to know that that's there, and if that comes up, then you just kind of leave it, change the subject, talk about something else. Like that, because in the back of their mind, they know they've been defeated. But at the same time, is then if you change the topic or the mood, then they've gotten their out, they've been able to maintain their prestige, you know? And so then if you do that, they have to respect you for defeating them and have to respect you for, you know, maintaining their position. Like that. So in other words, you don't point it out and I defeat like this. No, then they feel bad personally. The other ones, then you just change like that. So then they will slowly, slowly start to, they'll either stay away or they'll become more close. Right? They'll either be afraid or they'll respect. You know? Yes.
One criticism of the conservative scheme is that it puts the needs of the government or the society ahead of that of the individual. And
yes.
That the liberal
is
more individualistic. It
but then they put the individual ahead of the society. So that means one individual could do something that's good for him, but bad for everything else. So why is that better? So the idea is that that society has a position and the individual has to fit into that. That's the good part of the conservative. But that the individual has to be considered, even though the society, the whole structure of the society is important. That's the strong thing about the liberal. But to say that it's one or the other, you have to have them both together. So that means there has to be some restraint on the overall is more important than the individual, and there has to be some restraint on the individual is important. So that balance is what the Vedic is talking about.
I'm still not clear when you were saying that the liberal isn't actually individualistic at all in reality.
Because it's all about, say, women's rights. It's not about this particular woman. It's about women.
Right.
So where's the personal? Uh-huh. It's impersonal. Brahman is woman.
Oh.
Womanness or womanhood.
Yeah.
It's Brahman level.
Oh, I see.
Right? Because they never get to the Paramatma level because there's not something you're supposed to do. Right? It's whatever you like. You're a woman, you have your rights, so you can do whatever you like. Mm-hmm. But the point is that if you do whatever you like, then where's the social structure? How do you interact as a society? Right? And the sense of community and interaction is supposed to be important for the liberal. But their philosophy is actually directly opposed to it. Mm. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
While the others, then, the conservative also, they have a very tight community. The liberals don't have a tight community. Mm-hmm. It means as individuals, they're not tight. But if they get together and a common issue comes up, then they'll bond together for the issue. But as soon as the issue's over, it's not that personally they have relations. While the conservative, as a group, they'll have strong relations. They'll stay together as a group. But then the weakness is that since it's about the interaction of the individuals within the group, but the group itself is more important than the individual. That's where the weakness comes. So at some point, then an individual has to be dropped because they don't fit into the group. They can't accommodate anything. Mm-hmm. So then they'll feel bad. Mm. Right? You know, generally becoming a liberal.
Yeah.
You know, so each one has an inherent strength and an inherent weakness. So the point is that they're both right, they're both wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're supposed to take those both together. Mm. Right? That you have the position of the community and you have the position of the individual. You have to balance those two. Because mm-hmm. the point is the community is made up of individuals. But the point is, as individuals, the function of the community, they have to be able to interact. There has to be some common rule, some common law. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, how do you know what's acceptable? You know, it's not just, it's up to them. There has to be a common law. Otherwise, it disturbs others. Mm-hmm. You know, you sing whatever you want in the song, yeah, but then, you know, millions of teenagers hear it, and then they start to think like that. So, point is you want to talk like that, great, but sing in the shower, you know, like that, then who cares? You know what I'm saying? And if people like it, they can come and stand outside and listen. You know, but the point is they're saying it's freedom of speech, but no, it's making of money. It's not freedom of speech. It's not that the guy feels that this message has to be told. No, it's all about making money. That's all. It's nothing to do with freedom of speech. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Because if another guy came up and told them, you know, hey, you know, you sing like that again and we'll, you know, rearrange your face, there's a good chance he won't sing like that. You know? So the thing is but, you know, if any authority tells them, then, oh, that's it's freedom of speech. Like that. Freedom of speech means you can speak whatever you feel is right about, you know, proper justice and these kinds like that. It shouldn't be that politically you're controlled. That's what freedom of speech is meant for. Freedom of speech is not you can just say anything uncultured, mm-hmm. and that's fine. That's not what it was meant for. Mm-hmm. It was meant that people on this side of the ocean, you know, had something to say about how people on that side of the ocean were managing them. But because they said it, that wasn't allowed, so they couldn't speak that. That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's not about that you can speak in an uncultured way. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, so it's not balanced because there's no standard. How do you judge what speech is and what freedom is? There's no definition. Mm-hmm. So it's up to each individual can have their own definition. And as long as you have more people agreeing with you, then you're in the position of power. Your definition of truth is correct. But as soon as the other party becomes bigger, then your definition doesn't mean anything anymore. Theirs does. So therefore, how do you have social stability?
Yeah.
Right? The point is if there's not continuity, how is this, you know, how is there stability, how is there satisfaction, how is there all these different things? So that's why the conservative element is important. It creates stability, right? But the others are thinking, no, there'll be stability by that individuality. So the point is they're taking two opposing sides of one thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that they're accepting one, but not the other. The point is that you have to accept both. So by accepting both, there's no extremes. It comes to the middle. It's a balance. That means there is the community and there is the individual, but you have to balance that. Mm-hmm. That makes the middle path. Right. The middle path's not a compromise. Mm-hmm. Well, a little of this, something of there, something. Mm-hmm. No, it's that this is correct here, this is correct mm-hmm. there. So you accept these points from this side and those points from that side. But they're saying, no, on one point, you accept part from them and part from mm-hmm. them, half-half. Mm-hmm. But it's not like that. It's what's correct on this side, you accept that. What's correct on that side, you accept it. That's the middle. So that's why even though people talk about the middle, they can never get the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 So that's does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, pranamoy means it's a group. Right, either by just general life in general, or you know, which is Surya, or Ganapatya means it's specific. You know, you're worried about the trees. Mm-hmm. You know, like the greenies, they're worried about the plants and that. You know, worried about people have nice things, but they don't mind, you know, disturbing people who they feel don't like trees. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can't kill the tree, but you could kill the person. You can't cut down the forest, but you could blow up their factory. You know, so. You know, how does that work? You know what I'm saying? It's not balanced. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that, you know, the trees are there for the support of human society, but you have to have a balance. It can't be that only a few people are getting a benefit. It has to benefit society. mm-hmm. right? But it's not that somebody can't become rich. You know what I'm saying? So all these different things that come up by who's opposing, mm-hmm. you know? Because then it's there. If you take, you know, the left, so far left, or the, you know, the radical left, then the individual right is gone, totally. So what's the difference between them and the radical right? There's no difference. It's just the standards by which you decide how, in other words, what philosophy is prominent over the individual. Right? So that's, but because of illusion, they can't see that that's what they're doing. You know, they're so attached. So they're blinded by, you know, certain words and this and that, and there's so much passion. Yeah. So they can't actually properly discuss. Mm-hmm. Right? What to do. Right? So that's why what's needed is a cultural revolution to establish what's actually the proper path. Then everybody can get along. Because the point is there can be differences. It doesn't matter. But it should be, you know, somebody wants to live simple and not get involved in the rat race, fine. But then do it in a way that doesn't bother the rat race. And the rat race should do their rat race so it doesn't bother those who don't want to be involved in the rat race. You know?
Yeah.
Like that. You know, because it's all just modes. You know, mode of passion is more, you require a rat race. You know? Mode of ignorance is more, you don't require a rat race. You know? You know, as we saw in the yoga, if the two are perfectly balanced, you don't know what to do. You know, you get nothing done. Right? Like that. So you want to establish the mode of goodness, because then things are accomplished, benefit is there, but at the same time, the good qualities are cultivated. Right? Because that's the thing is, they are, in mode of goodness, the good qualities are the lifestyle. In the mode of passion, the good qualities are the technique. Right? In other words, I deal with Mr. Smith nicely, then because he's comfortable in the company, he works harder. But it's only a technique. I'm only dealing with him because it's a technique to get him to work harder. It's not that I care at all about Mr. Smith. Right? But the principle you should care for, you know, those your workers, that's just a human quality. That's on the, you as a person should care, right? And then they as a person will like you as a person, therefore they'll work. That can be permanent, mm-hmm. you know, long term, permanent as it gets around here. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is they're not catching these things. They're using good qualities as technique, that's a mode of passion. But good qualities are actually supposed to be the lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? You know? So you get what you want, but then it's not specifically yours to enjoy. So they want to get what they want and be able to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, the point is if you, so that's the problem. Those who don't use the proper technique don't get what they want. You know, and those who use the proper technique get. But the point is you only get through those qualities, or only can keep it if you use the proper qualities, because otherwise you lose it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the thing, is we have this idea, I'm going to have my cake and eat it, when you can't. It's one or the other, right? And so that's the point, is that you want to eat it, you don't have it. So you don't eat it, you have it. So
it.
Yeah, you know, so it's a possibility you could eat it, but you never eat it. You know, so that's the thing, is we have this illusory concept of what happiness is, how we'll be happy. When it's actually, the point is you can have it and others can eat it. Then you'll always have it. You know, you'll always get it. But if it's like you're just going to enjoy it, then it goes away. You know. So that's our point. There is the Lord and the devotees, like that. And then, along with that, then others are taken care of. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Yes.
That
makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, so in other words, the Pat Shakti means that the Achintya Shakti is transformed into Maya and the Jivas. Right? So, but not Brahman. So then Brahman itself doesn't become transformed. Right? So when we say Parinamavad, we don't mean Brahman itself, but Brahman Shakti has become transformed. Vikara, transformation, is the separate, distinct identity manifest from the Absolute. Yogurt produced from milk retains some similarity with milk. However, the intelligent designates yogurt with a separate identity from milk. This is vikara. Therefore, the view of Brahma Parinamavad, that this material universe and the jivas are transformations of Brahman, and yet still non-different from Brahman, without separate identities from Brahman, is very distorted and lacking in intelligence. Because otherwise, milk's transformed into yogurt. You have to make a distinction, right? How they act and everything's different. But it's a transformation. So the point is that if you're saying the jivas and maya transform from Brahman, the point is that they don't act in any way like Brahman. Right? But you're saying that they're the same. So that means you can't tell the difference. You know, it's like that. So that means why it's a lack of intelligence. It's distorted and lacks intelligence. But the energy of the Lord can transform. But at the same time as it remains in its position. So the Chinta Shakti still remains as the Chinta Shakti. But at the same time it transforms into Jiva Shakti and the material, the external energy. Yes.
This Achintya Shakti is synonymous with Swarup Shakti?
Yeah, Achintya Shakti, Swarup Shakti. It's just different. It means it's just a matter of which quality you're bringing out. Mm-hmm. You know, so Swarup Shakti, you're bringing out the non-difference from the Lord, that aspect, and that that it's the manifestation. Means it's the energy by which the Lord's will can be manifest. You know, so it's Sarup, it's non-different from Him. Achintya, you're talking about inconceivable, of how it can do all these things at once, be the same non and different, at the same time all these other energies and all these different things, but it's still the same energy. That's Achintya, you know, and then Chit, you know, that activity of knowledge and how it's arranging. So the Chit Shakti is, you know, Yoga Maya, Mahamaya, like this. We'll look at that. When we talk about Swarup Shakti, we're talking about the pastimes of the Lord and like that. Achintya Shakti, we're just talking about the tattva, the positions of them. Does that make sense? Because it's the same.
Yeah.
Like that. Because there's one energy and it has so many subdivisions. Right?
Mm.
Furthermore, if according to the adherents of this school of thought, the impersonal Brahman is the one singular entity without qualities and distinction, whereby is the possibility of transformation of such a qualityless entity, illusory or otherwise? That means if it's the singular entity and everything's one, how can it transform? Because there's only one, and two, there's no qualities. Because when it transforms, you can give it qualities. Like that. So then where does that come from if it's all one? Right? So then from these two things is, they can't tell the difference, and there is difference, so then that can't happen, according to their philosophy. Further, if it is accepted that such a qualityless Brahman is transformable, then Brahman is robbed of the absolute and detached status. Hence, the theory of Brahma Parinamavad is very inaccurate. Right? So that's just because generally when we say Vivartavad and Parinamavad, Vivarta means Mayavad and Parinama means Vaishnav. But what he's pointing out is that there is Brahma Parinamavad, so you have to be very careful of that, just in case. Because you might meet Mayavadis that say, well, yes, we're Parinamavad. Right? Then the problem is it's a different kind. Yes.
So under the scheme that energy is what's transforming down into the material, but in the spiritual, Brahman actually transformed into so many different varieties as well, like the Dham and the associates of the Lord. So
but it's
Brahman
still,
can transform.
No, but it's still the Achintya Shakti. Because the spiritual world is also the Swarup Shakti.
Oh,
it's just that's the spiritual manifestation. Then you have the material, then you have the in-between.
So strictly speaking, Brahman refers to Bhagavan, to Krishna.
Yes.
Raja Krishna, wouldn't that be?
It means to the Lord's energy. I mean, to the Lord's... Brahman is the effulgence of his qualities. Like that. So it is him. You know, but it's only the aspect of his qualities. But they're not personal qualities. It means absolute, unlimited, you know, the greatest, like that. So it's not specific. Uh-huh. Because he's the absolute, then you have to have something to compare it to. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the greatest, so what happened that you would say he's the greatest? Mm-hmm. Like that. So there's no manifestation. So even in the Brahman, we're talking in the Brahman level, you do still have the masculine and feminine principle. But it's impersonal.
Right.
Right? So there is still the I-ness and the I-hood. Mm-hmm. So you can find that in everything. Mm-hmm. So that's how one can see the Lord in everything. Mm-hmm. Right? At the same time as that's coming from the person. So naturally that quality that you're appreciating, either the I-ness, I-hood, or that combination, goes back to the manifestation of the quality in Krishna's pastimes, mm-hmm. you know, of the person. Mm-hmm. So then it just naturally becomes a step to see like that. But otherwise, it's all Brahman, it's all there, but what's going on is, you know, like we say, the pillar, there is the strength itself, then there's the manifestation of strength.
Yeah.
Right? So that's in the form of pillar, but there's the principle of pillarness. Mm-hmm. Right? And then there's a variety of pillars, so you have the pillar hood. Mm-hmm. Right? So each one, wherever the one thing is the masculine, the other is the feminine, where the feminine is, that also can be in a different context the masculine, because there's no difference between them. Mm-hmm. But the point is in any one given situation, you can always appreciate the masculine masculine quality and the feminine quality. Because the Lord is non-different, but there's that difference. You know, so though everything's manifest by his internal potency, you can still appreciate the feminine quality and the masculine quality. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? By the arrangement of Yoga Maya, Krishna then has his particular form for that particular pastime. Right? Because he wants that, so it's his energy that does it. But you can still appreciate the masculineness there of how he behaves. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, is that just like, let's say you have actors, right? So they're dressed in a particular way, but you can still appreciate that particular quality of that actor, mm-hmm. right? But you dress them up in a different way. Now it's a different role, a different everything, but you can still appreciate that quality of that particular actor.
Right.
So that's Krishna, mm-hmm. is that even though his internal potency is manifesting everything, still you can appreciate him in whatever situation.
Right.
You know, so whether he's a little boy, whether he's a youth, whether he's, you know, on the Shringa day, or it doesn't matter, you can still appreciate him. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. So that's the element. So then one can actually identify. Because mm-hmm. then otherwise you get too heady about the philosophy, which is unnecessary. Because when you get into rasa, it's not so important to analyze the tattva element so much, but unless it's the principles of how rasa work, right? It means there'll be the application of the rasa, and then there's the knowledge of how rasa functions. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge of how rasa functions is okay to analyze, you know, mm-hmm. to great depth, mm-hmm. and then how that's being applied. But to analyze the tattva so far, when you go into the pastimes, it's unnecessary. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what was happening before, is the, you know, the smarta was making that point. So if everything's manifest by the internal potency, so that means even Krishna's form is his internal potency, then where's Krishna? You know, his point is you don't have to analyze this far. Because the point is it's him and his energy are non-different. So it is him. But at the same time, it's a manifestation of his energy. But you can still tell his masculine qualities coming from that threefold bending form, and Radharani's qualities coming from her form. You can tell the difference, right? Lalita acts differently, Vishakha differently, mm-hmm. right? So you can tell who they are, even though it's the same, that Swarup Shakti is still manifesting everything. You can still tell the individuals. Mm-hmm. So you're worried about the interaction of the individuals. You're not worried about what it's made out of. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It means the fork and the spoon are both made out of whatever it is, you know, stainless steel or plastic or silver. But you can still tell what's the fork and what's the spoon and what they can do and everything. So you're, the point is not, well, they're both stainless steel. How do you tell the difference? No, the point is what they do, that's where you tell the difference. So the manifestation of the Lord's potency, it's what they do, that's where you look at the difference. So that's why it's intubated beta. Tattva is simultaneously one and different. But if you try to take the different too much or the one too much, you'll have problem. You have to be able to accept they can both function. That's why it says inconceivably, simultaneously, one and different. Right? It's inconceivable how they are, and simultaneously it's going on. Right? If we say inconceivable, one and difference, then we get dwait advait. You know, it's one, it's two. But we're saying simultaneous. So it's inconceivable, simultaneous, one and difference. Right? So it's going on at the same time. So that's that one is inconceivable just how those two things can function. But at the same time, it's also inconceivable how the two are happening simultaneously. You know, at the same time is how they're different. So it all works. It just takes it has to be revealed. Because it's only by the Lord's grace that one can understand him, you know, by any of the Vaishnava philosophies, but especially this Chittabheda Veda Tattva. It's like one has to have that faith in Vajrakrishna, then one can understand that. Otherwise, if not, then one will understand one of the others. Because you don't need the one and, means one and different will explain everybody else's, but generally in the pastimes, what they focus on, their own philosophy is enough to how much they appreciate. So that means the Gaudiya is appreciating more from the pastime. Mm-hmm. Because they're able to appreciate the contradiction. I mean, the others, of course, is the contradiction, but they'll be looking at one and then looking at the other. Mm-hmm. But they don't look at the two at the same time. So there's elements of the rasa that don't come out. But the appreciation of the Lord, that they'll always have. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you're dealing with the same Lord and the same principle of devotees. So the whatever, as you come down through the sampradayas, it's still the same. The principles are the same. But the particular manifestation is different. You know? Like raganuga, what does that mean? Rag, spontaneous. The one is that you're very inspired within the rules. Right? So that way they would say spontaneous. But what we're saying is spontaneous, where the rules aren't, it's still you're following rules, but the rules aren't the primary point. Mm-hmm. While the other is that you're spontaneous, but you're still expressing it through the rule. The other is the rule is the basis of the expression of spontaneity. So I'm saying you can't get rid of the two things, but just which one's prominent.
Yes.
So even amongst the Shris, they'll have that spontaneous element. You can talk about spontaneous devotional service, they won't have a problem with it. Because they also discuss it, but their meaning of it is different.
Yeah.
You know, how it manifests is different.
Yeah.
Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so surrender, association with devotees, everything's the same. That's why amongst Vaishnavas we can talk the same thing. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, specifically within the Gaudiyas, then there's the Chitta Veda Veda Tattva. That then makes that specialness that then you're dealing with Vajrakrishna. Mm-hmm. How it can be all that at once and just accommodate it. But the point is it's the affection that's the prominence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Chinta Veda Veda Tattva means that Krishna can have his cake and eat it too.
Yes. Because he's the source of the cake and the source of the eating. Nice. So it's like Draupadi's plate. Like that. Oh, okay. However, the Shakti Parinamavad theory does not suffer from these logical deficiencies. Here, Brahman is certainly detached, independent, and immutable. However, in this understanding, the unlimitedly powerful Achintya Shakti of Brahman, capable of making the impossible possible, transforms partly into the Jiva Shakti and partly into the illusory Maya Shakti. Not total transformation, in other words, not just partly. Because it only takes, I think, you know, we were discussing, oh no, that wasn't this here. In the Lakshmi Tantra, Lakshmi Devi is explaining, because the question is, we always discuss it from Vishnu's point of view. So in the Lakshmi Tantra, it's describing from Lakshmi's point of view. Because the point is there's a non-difference. So she is the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, she's the Shakti. Right? So, because we look at it, yeah, Krishna is there, and then here's this energy. But from her point of view, see, you know, she'll look at it from the other side. Mm-hmm. Right? So she's pointing out that for the material manifestation, it uses, I think, a millionth of a millionth part of her potency is required to manifest the material world. And that's just there. In another place it says billions. So, you know, just in other words, she's saying it's an extremely small amount that's required to run the whole material world. So the full manifestation of the Achintya Shakti then is in the spiritual manifestation. So that's why it says partial. Partial doesn't mean it's a big chunk. Partial, we're talking about extreme, even though the material creation is 1/4 of the cosmic creation, but the amount of energy to run it is, you know, a billionth of the necessity. Right? So that means that's why you don't get much taste out of it here. We get used to it. There's hardly any difference, so you get used to it, just like the, you know. So, but what do you call it? But the difference between this and the spiritual is immense.
It's energy efficient.
Yes. Yeah. Means, you know, you don't put much energy into something that's not important. Right. You know, like that. You know, it's like, how you say? It's like, let's say, I mean, I've seen this, you know, you have the adults sitting there and then the really small kids, the 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, you know, sitting there eating. So then, you know, the adult wants something more, some salt or some chili or something, you know, some pepper or something more. But, you know, the kid doesn't require it and it's not going to be good for them, but the kid wants it. You know, the adults have it, they want it. So I've seen, means you have two paths. You have the one where the mother, no, you can't have it, this, that, kid's crying, you know, this, that, disrupts the whole thing. But then these other ones I've seen, I've seen this in Brahmin families. They just take the thing, and then they put, like they're putting their hand, but they don't take anything, and then they go like this, and then they do it really quickly. So you want, okay, you like that, and then go. And the kid's happy. The kid starts eating, because the kid doesn't know what it is. He just saw, they have it, I want it, but they don't know what it is. You know? So it's not even, okay, we'll give you, and then the kid's crying because it's too hot, or it's this or that. You know, no, they just, and then the kid thinks they have it. So that's the illusion. So then, and it doesn't take much. What we're saying is that to run the illusion, it's you know, it means there was run by nothing, right? You know, just run like that. So when Lakshmi Devi says, you know, it's a millionth part of a millionth, you know, then that's what she means. It doesn't take much. It's a little like this. And then, wow.
Here we're pretending to be gods.
So. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like the trees, the leaves change color. Woo. You know, the leaves fall off. Woo. The leaves come back on. Woo. You know, it's just, you know,
on and on.
It doesn't take much. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like one thing I noticed. I mean, I noticed it the most in London, but it's everywhere. But there you have, you know, they have the Ring Road. You know, so many, you know, 6 lanes. Mm. Whatever it is, like that. You know, it's like America is 12 lanes. So they have 6, whatever it is. You know, so, I don't mean to offend anybody if they're from the UK or something like that. like that. So then they're going along, and then you run into a thing, and this traffic slows down, stops, this, that, and then you're waiting slowly, it starts up, you get by, and then you find out one car has crashed on the side of the road or something. And that, but everybody's stopping to watch. They're driving slow and watching as if it's something amazing. There was nothing blocking the road, because as soon as you get past that, it's completely free open highway again.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing. They're so amazed by something that's not actually that amazing. You know. Or, but whatever it is, because it's the chintya shakti that's transforming. So of course it's going to be something wonderful. But that wonderfulness is still a millionth of a millionth part of what is actually wonderful. So if we think this place is wonderful, right, you know, then you know, you'll definitely be impressed by the spiritual world. You know, it's going to, okay. When the Brahman desired the jivas to be manifest, immediately his transcendental jiva shakti went into action and produced the innumerable jivas. When Brahman wanted the material world to come into existence, immediately his Maya Shakti, the shadow form of his Parashakti, went into action, constructing the material cosmos. However, in all these activities, Brahman in himself eternally remains unaffected and without transformation. So simply, his energy is carrying out his desire. Right? He desires, it happens. Like that. Yes?
Vishnu Tattva can transform, though, into Dwarka Krishna. Wrong.
But no, that's just, it's not a matter of transforming, because it's not that he is different qualities and then lacking other. It's a matter of how much qualities he's manifesting, right? So, means in other words, as Brahman, he's not manifesting any personal attributes. They're all impersonal attributes. But we take it impersonal means nothing. No, impersonal means it's not applied, you know. In other words, what we were talking before, the liberal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, say it's not applied, it's just generic.
Right.
Strength. Right? So when it becomes applied to something, it becomes personal. So it's just not applied. Brahman means it's partially applied, partially not applied. Because it's the Lord, but he's only creating, just creating the laws. He's not actually, you know, interacting with the devotees and that kind of element. So that comes in Bhagavan. Then, in Raj, he can manifest his full personality. In Dwarka, then it's slightly reduced.
So on that note,
you know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you're at home, so all and you're with really good friends, you've grown up together, so, you know, you're really crazy and all kinds of things, and from moment to moment, you know, what you're doing and saying is completely different. But as soon as you walk out the door, then they only see a portion of that. They see that formal part and this and that. It doesn't mean you're a different person. It just means you're only manifesting that much. Mm-hmm. So Krishna in Vaikuntha means he's only manifesting the formal part.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So it's not a transformation.
Okay.
Shiva is a transformation.
Right. But in that sense, Paramatma is reduced manifestation of the qualities of Bhagavan.
Yes.
And on that note, Brahman is just the least amount of qualities that Vishnu Tattva exhibits?
Yeah, well, it means it's all the unlimited qualities, but the manifestation of them is not there. Because the manifestation is through the external energy. Like this form of the pillar, that's through the external energy. So the feminine aspect is through material energy. Well, in the spiritual, the feminine aspect is through spiritual energy. Like that. But the quality of strength is still there. So the building stands up in Vrindavan because of, you know, Krishna being strength. But there, the manifestation of the building is internal potency. So here it's external potency. So.
Mm.
Right? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned about Lord Shiva. So he is not a Shakti Paranamavad.
No, he's actually Purusha. He's not energy. He's energetic, but he's been transformed. So milk is transformed into yogurt. So it's non-different, but at the same time, it is. He is different.
Yeah.
So he's eternally different.
Shaktiman Parinam.
Yeah, means there. But the point is he's not counted in Vishnu Tattva.
Okay.
Right. Well, the Shakti is still counted as Shakti, like that. So he's in his own category. So he's in. He's not Vishnu Tattva, but he's still Purusha, like that.
He consorts with Parvati.
With the external potency, yes.
Right.
Yeah. But that's only the means for the illusory aspect. That's means. The manifestation, that's only as Rudra, but as Sadashiv, then he's not. So therefore, then that is the natural, the reflection in its transcendental position. Right. So that's also there, you know, because the shadow is also non-different from the person. Right. So you have with Maya, you have her. You know, applying illusion to the living entities, but there's her herself as a devotee in that inferior, the personification of that inferior energy of the Lord. So that's his concept. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, yeah. Does that work? Yes. But in the pastimes, you don't see. You only see that interaction basically here, it appears. Like that. Or you do, then you have to go to Sandipani Muni's ashram. But once you go to Vrindavan, then Sadashiva is not there. Okay. For the sake of argument, one may say that for Brahman to desire in itself is a transformation of Brahman. Therefore, how may such a transformation exist in an immutable Brahman? This mistaken argument is based on the observation of the action of desire within the jiva, which should not be applied to Brahman. The desire of the jiva brings the jiva into contact with a further energy of Brahman, which in turn then affects the external. And then affects the infinitesimal jiva and thus his desire. Hence the desire of the jiva is vikara, mutable, by the effect of contact with the powerful energies of Brahman. This is not the case with Brahman, whose incorruptible and supremely independent desire springs unrestrainedly from his intrinsic nature. Although his desire is non-different from his shakti, it is simultaneously also distinct from his shakti. Right, because his desire is carried out by the Shakti, so it's non-different. Because his desire is the Shakti will do this. But at the same time, it's distinct.
Could you say it's the link? The link between the Shakti and Brahman?
Meaning the desire.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more, it's also the existence, it's also the, it means you have to have samanda, abhideya, and prayojana, it means they all three match.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because desire would just be only one.
Yeah.
Therefore, in conclusion, the absolutely independent desire and will of Brahman is his inherent inseparable nature, and externally imposed mutability and transformation are alien to its constitution. So in other words, this desire, these are just him. Because we're taking it that if you apply that, then the jiva has it, he has that in illusion. Right? Which we'll say, he has these desires in illusion. But at the same time, he does have original desires. Right? So the point is if that's that original desire, that's inherent in the jiva, so that means that he only has a part of the qualities of God. So that means there must be that unlimited within the Lord. Right. The conclusion is that the Achintya Shakti of Brahman, in obedience to his orders, becomes active and is transformed. Right. So that's why you have these three. So interesting to note in here, because Prabhupada mentions this creation is coming from Brahman, because it only requires the Brahman aspect to manifest this, because the point is it's just the qualities and then the various forms that those qualities use of various activities they use to attain that quality. I'm saying, so therefore the material manifestation, each form and each activity is based on a particular quality of Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So Prabhupada mentions that it's manifest from Brahman, because that's what it is. It only takes that much. Paramatma manages it, but its manifestation of its creation, you know, like this is from Brahman. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's quite simple. The nature of the transformation of Brahman Shakti should now be considered. Right? So now we've established where it is, now we'll get into the nature of that Shakti. The Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 7.123.127 describes that a touchstone gem transforms metals and stones into gold and gems respectively. Okay, so metals go into gold, stones into gems. Keep that in mind, right? Without itself being transformed in any way. This example can be applied to the Supreme Lord and the process of creation of the material universe. The Supreme Lord creates the unlimited material cosmos, complete with the 14 planetary systems and the innumerable jivas within, simply by his desire, which activates his achintya shakti. Yet he himself remains vikara shunya, unaffected, untransformed, and complete, regardless of all these activities. Right? So that's where the Mayavadis get their clue from, but they can't connect all these things. So that's why we say it's less intelligent. You know, it's a misapplication, misunderstanding. Therefore, the term vikara shunya need not be limited only to postulated impersonal Brahman. Rather, the term may be correctly applied the unlimited absolute person Brahman, who has supreme lordship and a purely spiritual form, eternally and unlimitedly imbued with the 6 transcendental opulences. Right? So he never transforms. So the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, you know, imbued with all opulences, he doesn't transform. It's his energies that transform, or partially transform. Actually, on account of his achintya shakti, the Supreme Lord is simultaneously and eternally both personal and impersonal. Right? Because that's what achintya is. How is it possible? But it's possible. If only his impersonal aspect is acknowledged, his supreme status and absolute completeness is diminished. A pertinent question at this juncture would be, how can the two apparently conflicting eternal paradigms of personality and impersonality simultaneously coexist? The reply, it is impossible for the human intellect to accept this proposition, because the intellect is limited. But within the paradigm of the achintya shakti of the Supreme Lord, such apparent contradictions are easily harmonized. Right? So, it means just by intelligence one can never understand this. It's not possible. So it's only by the grace of the Lord, right? When that chit shakti then enters the consciousness, then one's able to understand. Because otherwise it's not possible to understand two things that don't match, right? Because that's the thing about the material, is only one thing can happen at a time. It can be one or the other. So that's why, if it can only be one thing, then you have to know which things to take from this and which things to take from that you can have them functioning at the same time as only one thing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But for Krishna, then they can all be there. Right? And for the situation, then he'll use what's appropriate and everything. Yes.
But can't material things be simultaneous and one?
Because they can by that understanding, but for the materialist, he can't understand it.
Like cold water and warm water.
But then it's when you put cold and warm together, you get tepid.
Yeah. That's
when you put warm and hot together, you get hot. Really, you get hot. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It changes the thing.
Yeah.
So he gets a different, because there is a transformation. But the point is, the Lord doesn't transform, his energy transforms. So that he is non-different from his energy. So simultaneously, he is the same and he is different.
Yeah.
Like that. Yes.
When this is explaining, he speak about Advaita Vada. So is there some parampara?
Yeah, it'll be.
Opposing this?
Yeah. There is. I don't know. I can't give you details, but it's you. Did it come up? No. Yeah, I can't give you details like that.
So there is some school.
It's a school. It's a school of thought. Like that. That's why there is these original schools of thought, and so Mayavada is just kind of connected into them.
Yes.
You know, like that. So it's easier if you use the Vivarta, because if you're used to there's supposedly nothing, so then just that there's Brahman is already a step, and so then everything else is illusion, because they already say everything's illusion, the jiva's illusion, the material manifestation's illusion. The only difference is they're taking this void instead of this Brahman. So that's also, that's why we say it's actually Buddhist philosophy. So the Vivartavada is technically Buddhism. You know, so this Brahma Parinamavada, the Advaitavada, that will be a little bit more Vedic. You know, it means it's a misapplication of the Vedic. While the other is just a applying the non-Vedic into the Vedic context. Like that, because Vivartavada really just doesn't stand. But you know, it works if you're trying to convert Buddhists into Hindus.
Nirvishesha
Shunyavadi. Yes. So Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. Same thing. It's just a matter of what. Basically, it's what color they are. Is it black or is it white? So that's all. I guess if you're liberal, it's gray.
But a particular kind of gray.
Yeah,
shades
of gray. Yes. Whatever they feel like. Okay. Vrajanath, kindly define Vivartavad. Raghunath Das Babaji. The false identification of the jiva with his material body is called Vivarta. However, the Mayavad philosophers have ignored the Vedic definition of Vivarta and have misconstrued the actual Vedic meaning to their own particular notion. Right? So, for us also, the term Vivarta, the Vedic term Vivarta, it simply means that the living entity is an illusion thinking he is the body. Right? Because he's not the body. He thinks he's transformed into the body, but he hasn't. There is no transformation. It's illusion. Does that make sense? So it is a Vedic principle, actual proper Vedic principle. Mm. But they've misconstrued this. Mm. Right? You know, what the Veda is actually meaning by it. Because it's not meaning that the jiva, that he is a jiva, that's illusion. No, that the jiva thinks he's the body, that's where the Vivarta is. But they're taking that just that he's a jiva, that's the Vivarta. You know, so naturally then the jiva, the illusion thinking he's the illusion of the body is just further illusion. Yeah.
Narottam Das Thakur wrote the book Prema Vivarta?
Prema Vivarta.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's our concept.
Yeah, okay. It means the yoga maya. Yeah. Yeah. However, okay. They say the truth is, I am Brahman, and its perverted perception is, I am the jiva. This bewildered misidentification they postulate is called Vivarta, right? So that's the difference. Vivarta means the jiva thinks he's the body, right? When he's not, he's the soul. But they're saying the Vivarta is, I'm actually Brahman, but I think I'm the jiva. That's where they put the Vivarta.
Yeah.
Right? You understand? So that's where it is. So the Vivarta is not the problem. They've just misapplied it.
Yeah.
The correct understanding of Vivartavad corresponds with the Shakti Parinamavad, the transformation of energy concept, whereas the Mayavad presentation of Vivartavad is ludicrous. The Mayavadis claim that the jiva is actually Brahman, but because of the bewildering influence of Maya, they have separate identities. As long as the jiva keeps contact with Maya, he remains a jiva, but when he disassociates from Maya, he immediately regains his Brahman status and identity. The point is this, but if Brahman is unchangeable, how does he become jiva?
Yeah.
Right? And even if you explain that, okay, then Brahman is transforming, you know, Brahman Parinamabad, but then the problem comes is that why would that happen? And if he's changed, that means he's transformable. So it doesn't work. That can't be the meaning of Vivarta. Vivarta has to mean that the jiva thinks in illusion that he is material energy. Right? He's material body. That's the Vivarta. Right? It means originally it's that he thinks I'm the controller and enjoyer. Yeah. And one who thinks that is put under the external energy. Because if he doesn't think that, he thinks I'm servant, he's under the internal energy.
So in Christianity, the principle of Satan comes as the same thing?
Yes, yes. It's just that the Maya is the Satan.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. And then the thing is, but there they say is, you know, was, you know, in other words, it's a transformed angel.
Yeah, fallen angel.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying at the point of it. You know. But at the same time, there's a difference. It's not connected with him or anything, or, you know. So it has some element of it's correct, but also there's not. That's what we're saying is that each thing, each thought, has some aspect that's correct. But if it's not properly situated in Krishna consciousness, there's some part that's not correct. There's something lacking. So in other words, whatever thought is there, take the part that's correct, and from that point, then bring it to Krishna. Right? Rather than you just completely oppose the thing. Unless, of course, it's a technique you're using. Right? But you can only use that technique properly if you actually understand the position it's coming from. Right? So the Vivartavad is not a problem in that if you understand Vivarta, meaning the illusion that the jiva is matter. But if you think, but the Vivartavad where the jiva is Brahman, that's bogus. So the point that there's an illusion going on, that's correct. But what is the illusion? That's where they're making the mistake. Right? So therefore, if you say, no, there's no illusion, it's just transparent. No, there is an illusion. We're here in the material world, everyone thinks that they're this and that. So that is an illusion. But they have to know what the actual illusion is. Right. So if you can define it and take it like that, then there. But if not, then you take it back and then just, no, it's not that, it's this. Then you can discuss on that point. Is that the correct understanding of Vivartavad corresponds with the Shakti Parinamavad, the transformation of energy concept. Whereas the Mayavad presentation of Vivartavad is ludicrous. The Mayavadis claim that the jiva is actually Brahman. Oh, we just did this. Unfortunately, the jiva does not exist without Maya, being the creation of Maya's effect upon Brahman. Therefore, the jiva's only conceivable liberation is to merge into the existence of Brahman, thus losing his illusory identity. Okay, so this is a continuation of their thing. Unfortunately, does not exist without Maya. Their point is that there's only Brahman, so the only reason there's jivas is that part of Brahman is covered by the jiva. Like the example of you have a pot, and there's some sky in the pot. So therefore you call it the pot. But actually it's still sky. So the pot is like the illusion, and then the sky in the pot, you consider it as separate from the sky, but actually it's one sky. You break the pot, then it's all one sky. So that's how they're looking at it. But they're not catching that the jiva exists even if there's no illusion.
Yeah.
Right? The jiva is an energy of the Lord, but they're not accepting energy. But at the same time, they're talking about jivas and maya. So where did that energy come from? So for the one, it's illusion that it's there. The other, oh, well, it's Brahman. But then if Brahman doesn't have energy, then how is there energy? So the point is, if you accept that Brahman has energy, as the energy transforms, then it takes care of all aspects. So the illusion is there, you know, the transformation is all these different things are there. Mm-hmm. It works. But only Shakti Parinamavad can actually explain it. Mm-hmm. The others, they won't explain it at all. In this way, the Mayavadis withhold the original eternal spiritual and individual identity from the jiva, putting him into a pigeonhole of illusion with a fictitious role. Right, so they're withholding that he has an original eternal spiritual form. So they're saying that's not there. They just say that no, he's become an illusion. Right. Another concocted claim of the Mayavadis concerns the Supreme Lord. So that's the jiva himself, right? As he is transcendental to material matter, he must allow himself to come under the influence of the Maya Shakti and accept an illusory material form based upon descending into the material world as an incarnation. Otherwise, he cannot enter the phenomenal world. While present upon this earth, the incarnations perform superhuman tasks, and when it is time for them to return to the spiritual platform, they give up their material forms, thus leaving this world. Brahman is formless, but to become an incarnation, Brahman must enter a material form composed of Maya. These are some of the philosophical aberrations propagated by the various Mayavadi schools. So the saying is, he doesn't, but he has to come under that illusion to take that form so he can function in here. But if it's all one and it doesn't matter, and it's just an illusion, what's the meaning? If it's him anyway? Right? Either it's an illusion and it hasn't transformed from him, so what's the problem? Why do you need to, you don't have to enter into somebody's dream, you just wake them up. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make sense. You enter the dream and then you're part of the dream and tell them this is not a dream, or wake up from the dream. But why should you wake up? That's an illusion also. It's all dream. So it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know? So then you have, or if it's a transformation, but he's already transformed, so why does he need to transform again?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's unnecessary. It's because whenever he wants, he just transforms back.
Yeah.
If it's he's desired to transform, then it would he would desire and transform back. So when he's tired of that, then he'll just transform back.
Yeah.
So why does he need to come? Unless it's just further the pastime. But the point is if then he's transforming. But the point is then where's the undifferentiated Brahman? You know?
Yeah. You're making a difference between avatar Brahman and jiva Brahman.
Yeah. Yeah, and then illusion Brahman.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you get three kinds of Brahman. Like that. Then there's the supreme Brahman. So there's four kinds of Brahman. But at the same time, is there no difference? So then it's not intelligence.
Yeah. You know?
So he says these are some by the various Mayavadi schools, because generally you won't get all of this at once. Mm. Right? Because they're in the Vivarta, they're either Vivartavad or Brahma Parinamavad.
Yeah.
So those will be probably opposed to each other, and each one thinks the other's totally bogus. Right? You know? But then within, then there's all these different, you know. So each one brings out this or brings out that. So ideas, you understand this whole thing, you can deal with any of them.
Yeah.
Of Vrajanath, are any of these Mayavadi teachings found in the Vedas? Raghunath Das Babaji. The answer is emphatically negative. It means none of this is in the Veda. They're just taking what's in the Veda and misinterpreting it. But the Vedas don't describe any of these. Nowhere do the Vedas uphold the Mayavadi precepts. In a sense, Mayavad philosophy is the same as Buddhism. The Padma Puran, Uttarakhanda 43:6 states, replying to the question of Uma Devi, Lord Shiva said, O Devi, Mayavad philosophy is extremely materialistic and warped. The nihilistic views of Buddhism have surreptitiously been disguised in the Vedic jargon, have entered the arena of civilized Aryan Dharma. This is the Mayavad philosophy, which I must propagate in Kali Yuga, having taken birth in a Brahmana family. Right. So here he's telling his wife that it's totally bogus. It's just Buddhism that he just uses Vedic jargon, that's all. Right. So just in Kali Yuga then it comes up. But this idea of the Advaitavad was there before Shankara's. That's you've always had these people who think the Brahman is supreme. Vrajanath, Master, Lord Shiva, the chief of the Devas, is a stalwart Vaishnava devotee. Why did he undertake such a terrible mission? Raghunath Das Babaji. Lord Shiva is the guna avatar of Sri Bhagavan. In order to fulfill their sinister motives, the Asuras had decided to take up the path of bhakti and self-interestedly worship the Supreme Lord to gain great fruit of results and conquer over the devoted devatas. The compassionate Lord, who always protects his surrendered devotees, became concerned with this new trend in the Asuras and set about to defend the purity of the institution of bhakti. He called for Lord Shiva and said, "Dear Shambhu, it will not be beneficial if the precepts of Shuddha Bhakti are preached to the envious rascal Asuras, who are steeped determinedly in tamasic nescience. In order to delude these Asuras, you must create a distorted commentary on the Vedas and present the impersonal Mayavad teachings. In this way, I will be concealed from the Asuras, who will be unvaguely aware, who will be invade in..." There's an L in there.
Inveigled.
How would you say that?
I would pronounce that inveigled.
Inveigled, yes. Inveigled. Does that mean you're invigorated by a bagel? So you're inveigled. But he's not mentioning the cream cheese. That's just taken for granted, right? Bagel means cream cheese, so you don't have to mention
it. In Bengali, you probably pronounce it inveigled.
Inveigled, yes, that's true. So that means, okay, so in other words, he just covered the Asuras with a mountain of bagels so they would get so distracted they forget about the Lord or something.
Something on the bottom, something on the top.
Oh, puts them inside. You know.
Inveigled.
Oh, inside the bagel, okay. Okay. In this way, I'll be concealed from the Asuras who will be away from the path of bhakti and made to follow impersonalism, thus leaving my favored devotees undisturbed in the relishment of Shuddha Bhakti. Right, this means, it seems to me this is a regular thing, because there's also a time when the Asuras, they understood that by the path of bhakti and by yajna and by tapasya that they would be elevated, you know, and then they can, the demigods do these things, that's why they're in control of the universe. So if the demons do it, they can get control of the universe. So the demigods came to the Lord, and so then he sent the impersonal philosopher, Jain and the Mayavad, Buddha. He sent Buddha, because it's the same thing. So Buddha came and Jina came, and so they bewildered them by speaking this Vivartavad, like that. So like that. So it's the typical thing when the demons, you know, take up devotional service simply for the purpose that they know it's efficient for getting their material desires. Because they don't care about the Lord or developing. It's one thing you turn to the Lord because you know He's the Supreme, and by surrendering to Him, your material desires will be taken care of. That has some element of sincerity to it, because then you can become purified and then take up service. But where it's like, you know, just this work, so you take advantage of the devotional process, you know, and then try to get what you want with no idea. You know, you're already committed that you're never going to take up devotion. You already know it exists. Well, the other person doesn't necessarily know. Mm-hmm. Or he knows it exists once that, but has these desires simultaneously. Mm-hmm. But here they know devotion exists, but they are not about to use it for surrender to the Lord. They just use it as a technique. Like that. Does that make sense? So then he sends the Mayavadis and the Buddhists, I mean, like him. Lord Shiva is a very dedicated Vaishnava devotee. At first expressed his sadness about being burdened with such an onerous responsibility. Oh, if it has an H, then it's an onerous. Okay. Onerous responsibility. But surrendered servant as he is, he unquestionably took up the mission and executed the orders of his Lord. Right? Because you have to put them in ignorance, and he's the Lord of ignorance. So, who better to do that? Right? You know.
Isn't there a purifying aspect to performing yajnas, so the demons, they would gradually get purified?
Yeah, yeah. That's why they were stopped from performing yagyas, because the point of their purification was not to just maintain their position. If they're doing their own yagyas as part of the varnashram system, so that they have all material facilities, why would the Lord bother them? But they're doing it to take over the heavenly planets. Right? So now you're not doing your own duty. Doing yagya as a grihastha, that's your duty. But to do the yagya so you can kick the demigods out and take their position, that means you're doing someone else's duty. That's not allowed. So therefore, then, they came and they stopped the sacrifice. How could Lord Shiva be blamed for this? For this reason, the pure Vaishnav saints never condemned Sri Shankaracharya, the incarnation of Lord Shiva, who preached the Mayavad philosophy. That's what Prabhupada says. The followers of Shankara, he doesn't say anything bad about. Right? The philosophy is a problem, but that was already known before. Shankara knows that. Right? But it's his followers who really take it up with, you know, great, you know, earnestness. Do you have earnesty? I mean, technically you could, but just people. Vrajanath. Are there scriptural evidences repudiating the Mayavad school of thought? Raghunath Das Babaji. The entire Vedic scriptures present strong proofs denouncing Mayavad philosophy. After scouring the Vedas, the torchbearers of the Mayavad school have come up with just four seemingly substantive statements, which they have inventively labeled as Mahavakya, great dictums. So they've gone through the whole Vedic literatures, they've come up with four verses that they've then misconstrued that this establishes their philosophy. Firstly, in the Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. The phenomenal world is an external manifestation of Brahman, is non-different from him. Right, so then you could get that Parinama, Brahma Parinamabad. Secondly, in the, or you say everything is one. Generally they use it like that. Most of them don't even get into the thing about creation. I don't think they got that much brain. Right? Secondly, the Aitreya Upanishad 1.5.3, Prajnanam Brahma. Pragya, pure knowledge, is transcendental and is of the same spiritual substance as Brahman. Right, so then the thing is then that's knowledge, and so then knowledge is a quality, you know, it's a potency, but they're not quite seeing that. So they think by knowledge, then I'll come to the Brahman platform. Right, so the first one is I am Brahman. Everybody's Brahman. Everything's Brahman. Then the second one is that through knowledge, therefore I will come to the Brahman platform.
From where?
Oh, from which platform they'll come to the Brahman platform? From illusion. From the darkness to the light. Thirdly, in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.8.7, Tattvam Asi Sveta Keto. Oh, Sveta Keto, you are that Brahman, right? So that's the whole point. They're saying you are that Brahman, right? But what we're saying is you are that Brahman means you are transcendental. But the point is within Brahman, there's differentiation. But if we're taking it, are we material or are we transcendental? So then we'll say you are that, you are transcendental. But within transcendental, then there's the Supreme Lord Brahman, his Shakti Brahman, and then us Brahman. Right, and the material world is also Brahman. So we are the, you know, servant of the Lord Brahman. Fourthly, in the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10, Aham Brahmasmi, I, the Jiva soul, am of the same nature as Brahman. Right, so again, that means transcendental. Right, the same nature, but just like the drop of ocean water is the same nature as the ocean, just one is very small and one is unlimited. According to the first Mahavakya, the material world and the jivas are all Brahman. Nothing exists outside of Brahman. The nature of Brahman has been described in Svetasvara Upanishad 6.8 as follows. The Supreme Lord never requires the assistance of material senses to accomplish his works, because he neither possesses the material body nor material senses. But it doesn't say he doesn't possess the spiritual body. So they're taking it that material means his body. So they said he doesn't have this, that means he has no body. But that means they didn't quite fully understand what's being meant here. Because you said that there's no material body. You didn't say there's no spiritual body. Right? Because he says he accomplishes things, but he doesn't have a material body. So how are you going to accomplish something? Because if we do say that you, only through form and activities can something be accomplished, and since he's accomplishing something, that means there must be a spiritual form, because there's not a material form. Right? His body is completely spiritual. Therefore, his physical appearance, presence is not limited like a material body. He is simultaneously present everywhere with his beautiful spiritual form. He is in Vrindavan, his beauty blossoming in fresh youthfulness, dallying in eternal pastimes, and at the same moment, he is fully present throughout his creation. Nothing or no one is equal to or greater than he. He is, because he is full of Achintya Shakti. His potency is defined as Achintya because the human intellect is unable to fathom her position. Parashakti, the supreme absolute potency, is another designation for his Achintya Shakti. Although this Achintya Shakti means para would mean transcendental. Although this Achintya Shakti is one, she is nevertheless manifest in three in manifold magnificence, known as jnana, cognition, bala, power, and kriya, activity. Right? So here's the same Upanishad. Oh no, this is Svetasara. He's not taking from Svetasara. Chandogya, Treya Chandogya, and Brihadara Angyaka. Yeah, so these ones he leaves. He doesn't even deal with them. So that's why he has to take these other ones and make them the Mahavakyas. Because otherwise the actual Mahavakya is by associating with sadhus, you know, devotees, then you can revive your lost relationship with the Lord, be established in transcendental relation with the Lord. That's the actual Mahavakya, but they're taking all these other ones.
Maharaj, this Upanishad, Chandogya, Etareya, and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, are they fully accepted by all schools?
Yes, yes. That's why they're used.
They're part of the 11?
Yeah, they're part of the 11. Because the 11, everybody will accept. After that, then one may or may not, because there's 108 Upanishads. But then the question comes, everybody agrees on the 11. But what's the 108? Then there'll be differences of opinion. Yes. Right? Because there's some 200, some odd Upanishads. Right? So when you say 108, that's just kind of, you know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, there's a lot more. But that's prominent. Because some Upanishads, they're only a few verses long. You know, 4 verses, you know, like that. Ishupanishad's only 18.
Yeah.
You know, some of these others, Chandogya, that they're very big. Like that. But also it's like Taittiriya Upanishad, like one section has 10 verses. Right? But it takes like 15 minutes to chant that section. Because one verse takes up half a page. You know, like that. You know, so. So when it gives like this, when it says 6-8, that whole thing was one verse. So it's this big.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jai Nityananda Gaudapri.
Can I get this recording from you?